This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Alex Chadwick. In this season of holiday travel travail, here is a story of real challenge. Horrific sandstorms, withering heat, freezing winds, endured on a long camel trek, 3.5 months across the middle of the Sahara Desert, south to north. It's a journey inspired by a book published nearly a century ago, Across the Sahara, from Tripoli to Bornu, by British explorer Hans Fischer.
Looking northwards from Bornu, the Saharan road led down over the skyline. What mystery and attraction did that road hold for me? There lay the great desert horizon, grey and hot over the low sand dunes, as later I saw it looking south from Tripoli and Barbary, standing up behind the mountains, a dazzling sheet of clear blue sky. The account of my journey will show how far I have succeeded and what I have learnt along the ancient road.
When John Hare found that book a couple of decades ago, there was no record of anyone completing the journey since Fischer in 1906. The route reaches from northern Nigeria up through Niger and Libya to the Mediterranean, almost 1,500 miles of desert, much of it trackless. But Hare, a one-time British colonial officer, now in what many would consider the age of retirement, a camel expert and conservationist and explorer, wanted to try. And a year ago, he set out. His account of the adventure is in this month's National Geographic magazine, and he sat down for a Radio Expeditions interview with us. He said he wanted his journey to be as much like Fischer's as possible. No trucks, no backup, the only concession to modernity, a GPS and a satellite phone.
Well, it wouldn't be right for me if we had a backup vehicle and a medical team and things that other people take, or even television cameras, actually. I mean, it's fine. We're all different. We all have our reasons. But I find that, no, I couldn't do it like that. I explore like the old-fashioned explorers, I suppose.
Your companions you're taking along. There's an old friend of yours from Kenya, mm-hmm. a camel rancher, mm-hmm. 77 years old. Mm-hmm. There's a retired academic from China mm-hmm. who's also a camel expert you'd known on expeditions mm-hmm. out there. I don't know if these are the kinds of people most people would imagine saying, okay, I got to get one of these guys to go with me.
Of course they wouldn't. We were quite an eccentric bunch. I don't think there's anybody over 70 I'd have taken who I know in the world. Jasper is a very special man. He's a very tough man. He's what I would call bushman. I mean, he's self-reliant. He's wonderful, make-do in tough situations. And also, he has an encyclopedic knowledge of camels and their sicknesses and diseases. In bringing Jasper, we were also bringing an amateur vet, which proved very important.
So here you are. You're starting out from northern Nigeria. You're heading right straight across the Sahara Desert. You have two dozen camels mm-hmm. that you've acquired.
25.
And off you go.
Off we go. We just disappear into the blue. But obviously, I had done preparation. I'd had all Hans Fischer's papers. I'd had his daily journeys, where he'd camped, where he'd set off, where he'd found water, which was the most important thing. We had maps, obviously, and we did have a GPS. So it wasn't unplanned, but it was unknown. And it was unknown because this camel road in its entirety had not been done for 100 years since Fischer. And Fischer had marked the water points, but that was 100 years ago. And wells can fill up or dry up. And so the worry before I set out was, would we have enough water? And in point of fact, that wasn't my problem. We did have enough water. We found the wells, 90% of them were still active. My problem, I discovered, was lack of food for the camels.
You start out with a guide, a man named Abba, who is a part of a desert tribal group named the Tubu. How does he find his way? You have a GPS that tells you where you are, but how do you know where to go?
Well, we're entirely in the hands of the guide. Now, Abba, yes, he's a Tubu, which is a tribe in northeastern Niger. He knew where the sand dunes were, whether to go left or right or over the top or whatever, because he lived there.
You know to a certain extent, but then you get out to a point where really no one's traveled before.
Absolutely. I mean, we had Fischer's maps. I had other maps. We knew where we had to get to from oasis to oasis, but how we actually got there. And if you make a mistake, actually, if you go off the route, And the route isn't a track on the ground, because the wind is blowing, the sand is covering everything all the time. If you go off your course, I don't think you live to tell the tale.
Well, what is it like out there? You're on a camel crossing the Sahara Desert. It must be incredibly hot.
It was hot a bit. It was about 99-102. It was about the hottest we got in southern Niger. But the further north we got, it got cooler and cooler. And when we got to southern Libya, it was really cold. I mean, really cold. And there were nights when it went down below freezing. We'd wake up in the morning and find that water we'd put out for our kettles had frozen. People think of deserts as really hot, but believe me, at certain times of year, they can be really cold. And during the day, with that cold wind blowing, the cold was one of the biggest problems, not the heat.
You have photographs here from a German photographer who accompanied you, Carsten Peter. There's a particular shot of an oasis or a lake near a place called Takatiba. Mm. It is so beautiful. Mm. This is what one imagines an oasis might look like in the desert, and then you think, nothing could actually look like what I'm imagining. But there it is in a picture.
It is an amazing place. It's in the middle of Libya, and there are 13, 14 salt lakes, some large, some small, hidden amongst the most gigantic sand dunes. The sand dunes were incredibly difficult to get across because the sand was very soft. And you sunk up to your knees, and the poor camels sunk up to their knees. And it was really very physically tough to get through it.
You didn't sleep in a tent. You slept out just outdoors in a bag.
Yeah, for 3.5 months, I didn't sleep under a roof. That was personal choice. I could have gone in a tent. We did have two tents. You would lie back at night, and you'd just stare up into this wonderful view of the solar system and the stars, so bright.
Let me ask you, you get to the end of this expedition, and what have you done?
Well, I run something called the Wild Camel Protection Foundation. There is a wild camel in China and Mongolia, and this charitable foundation has been set up because the animal is critically endangered. It's like the panda. There's only about 1,000 left in the world. And one of the reasons I did this trip was that through publicity, I would be able to increase awareness for the plight of the wild camel. And secondly, I did it for Vischer. Vischer was described in 1909 in the English magazine, The Illustrated London News, as one of the great explorers of our age, on a par with Shackleton. Today, many, many people have heard of Shackleton, but nobody's heard of Vischer. And so this is my personal contribution to, you know, enabling people to remember Vischer. And thirdly is the personal reason for wanting to do something and do it.
Explorer and conservationist John Hare, his story of crossing the Sahara is in this month's National Geographic. Videos and pictures are at npr.org. Excerpts from Hans Vischer's book were read by NPR's John Buckland.